February the 1st, 2013, we talk about the aftermath of the THQ liquidation, The Binding of Isaac, and ask you why we continue to play games that we don't actually like. Welcome to the 10th level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
David Meismith.
Ben Merkel.
And this is the 10th level. Hey guys, congratulations. We made it to 10.
Double digits.
Yay.
Yeah.
I remember. We're going to start driving cars.
Oh man, the whole world's ahead of us. For my 10th birthday, I got a Goosebumps VHS.
Ooh. Do you remember which Goosebumps?
I believe it was like the Mask of Horror or something like that.
Hmm.
Or maybe the one where the dad turns into a tree.
Ooh, I forget about that one. That one sounds good.
Yeah.
I think it's – so I never actually got into Goosebumps when I was young, but I always heard about the stories from friends. And the idea of the stories that they would talk about were always more horrifying than I think actually reading the book could be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for like for real. I mean, terrible stuff happens to these kids.
Right. It can be infinitely worse in your mind than they would actually make it in a kid's book.
Yeah.
Well – And the books were always like borderline like M. Night Shyamalan style with just like bizarre out of nowhere plot twists.
I was going to say the exact same thing. The books are completely focused on a twist at the end.
Yeah.
We're on Mars, not on Earth. Duh.
I reserve comment. Just because that very twist applies to something that came out here very recently. Anyway, the Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Those were good.
For the Goosebumps ones, those were top notch.
Yeah, those were very good.
I would go through to the ending pages and see which one I liked the best, and then go backwards and figure out how to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I still had those things because I had all the decision points dog-eared so I could go back to them easy. Yeah. Man, just
After a while, it's like Dark Souls that your first time through, you're like being very careful and meticulous. And then once you go through it again, you know exactly what to do, exactly where to turn.
Yeah. I need to play more interactive fiction because that's the analog version of that. Hmm. But anyway, yep. It's all Goosebumps all the time here on the RL Steincast.
Oh my gosh. Goosebumps.
Mr. Ross, I have a question for you.
Oh, I can answer, I think.
Do you have Alpha Protocol?
Yes, I do. It is sitting on my shelf.
That's the video game equivalent of a Goosebumps book like that. Mm.
Huh. Neat.
See, now I'm going to, for the rest of this podcast, whenever someone asks a question, just have the urge to follow it up with, turn to page 50.
Do you want to flap your wings?
For an answer in the affirmative, 57. Press 2. Yeah, exactly. You know what? That'll be my end boss. I can talk about my relationship with Alpha Protocol and other things. During the end boss phase, but there is a show for us to do, fellas.
The brief.
Oh, the brief. Things happen in this world, and we are here to astutely comment on them, and I think change the outcome by observing them. I'm not sure. Dennis, before we recorded, you said that you had something big to talk about. It's something we haven't talked about very much, so I'd like to see what we get.
I have something small to talk about. Which is a segue from what you just said, Cole.
Okay.
Oh, we got to go with the segue style.
Okay. Yep. All right.
And this is unconfirmed because I heard today that the uncertainty principle was debunked or it needs to be revised, that they were able to measure a position and the momentum of something at a smaller threshold than what was the uncertainty principle states.
Oh, no. Huh. That's all Heisenberg had.
I know. Well, that's what, I wasn't sure if you were referencing that
zombie
or not.
Cat.
No, that's Schrodinger.
Schrodinger. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Maybe that's what I was referencing. I think that is so is it that you change the outcome by observing it, or is it just that you can't observe both at the same time?
You change the outcome by observing it.
the change in the outcome by observing it is in things like the double slit experiment where the photon has to pass through
The reason why it works is it works whenever you're observing something so small that the act of observing it, hitting it with photons, causes it to change directions or change the course of action that it was going to take.
Right. Okay. So. Yeah. A principle put to use in the documentary book Timeline by esteemed scientist Michael Crichton.
Basically, what it comes down to is at some point, scientists realized that wizards were so much cooler than scientists, and they decided, let's just do that.
Yeah, it's like the great magic versus science wars, which, you know, the media doesn't report on those too often. Oh, man, if you guys are in the comic reading mood, there's a book out called Saga. The first trade paperback is out. Holy crap, it's so good.
Yeah, it's
like ridiculously good. It's just called Saga, and it's like $10 on the Rainforest.
I wanna put forth an asterisk on that brief comment though, because it is unconfirmed as of yet. This is only hearsay from people at work.
Is this government research that, like, do we need to bleep out? Are there black helicopters on the way?
I can't talk about it, guys.
Oh, shit.
I gotta go.
You fucked us all. Theoretical physics aside, there is something that did exist and now doesn't anymore, and I would like you to tell me about it, Dennis.
Yeah, basically, three little letters that went bust, THQ, is no longer with us, and the whole process of, I guess it's an auction, right? Auctioning off all of their different intellectual properties and games and all that stuff has gone through. It's been kind of a slow news week, so if people want, I guess you could each take part of this. The part I was interested in is South Park, The Stick of Truth. That's actually a game I was very excited for. And then, you know, this whole thing went down. I was like, well, we'll never see that. But Ubisoft has picked it up. So that one is alive and well. Funny enough, they were the only ones to bid on it. So I'm sure they got it at a steal.
There's a bit of an asterisk on that. That's the word of the week. Because like the South Park Studios, they protested like it being bought, like they didn't want Ubisoft to buy it.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah,
They tried to file,
I believe, an injunction to halt that.
Huh.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's not yours to buy, it's ours to sell, you know, something like that. So.
Huh. Interesting.
Isn't Obsidian the team that's working on it, or is that way off?
I believe Obsidian. Yeah, I think you're right. Unless that's changed. I haven't read too much about it since the. It is Obsidian. Yeah, because it was in that Game Informer issue from like way way back.
Yeah.
Who got the Saints Row team?
Who did get Saints Row? Let's see. Metro Series. Dead Air. I actually don't know. Like I said, I was interested in the South Park piece.
Yeah.
I also saw that no one picked up Darksiders, which is a game that I'm enjoying right now. So knowing that that has one sequel and will never show its face again is a little sad.
Yeah.
The one I thought was interesting... who picked up, was this where someone picked up Homefront?
Yes, I believe somebody did pick up Homefront.
Crytek.
Yeah, just because Homefront was a game that I thought, you know, really interesting setup, you know, tried some really interesting things. I really wanted to enjoy it. It just wasn't actually a good game. You know, it had everything but the gameplay.
Yeah, it was also written by a guy who, like, beats off to, you know, Cold War fiction, too.
Yeah. Like I said.
let's see here.
That is a rough visual, by the way.
Yeah, I pull no punches. Yeah. Homefront went to Crytek. Go ahead.
And Volition Incorporated, the people who made Saints Row the Third, ironically enough, was picked up by Koch Media. What a segue.
Yeah. Koch Media also bought, I believe it might be Coke, Koch. Let's say Koch.
Koch.
Okay.
I like the first one. It's more funny.
It is. It's a
Koch,
funny word.
Koch sounds just as dirty, though.
The only reason I say Coke is because the Koch brothers, the Tea Party people, rich dudes. Yeah. So Koch Media, also known as Deep Silver, I guess, they also bought the Metro license.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, so that's good. That's going to live on alive and well.
Doesn't it have a one that's in development right now?
Metro Last Night?
Two. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, is that like Hangover style game where they're talking about what they did last night? Or is it like the last night of existence sort of thing?
Yeah. And since it,
I think more the second.
It'll have in the sequel, the photographs from the from the digital camera from the night before will have a parody of one of the most tragic photos in history.
Mm.
Yeah. Sorry.
Wait, which one's that?
They had there was a parody of the photo from Vietnam. You know that one with the guy
narrow it down if you're talking about tragic photos.
Yeah, I suppose. No, the picture from Vietnam, the spy dissident who was being summarily executed on the street.
Oh, okay.
The trigger is pulled and he's wincing, but there's nothing coming out of the gun. Yeah. Okay.
I was thinking of the self-immolation. But.
Yeah, that one's pretty crazy too. Also, the kid with the name, any of them really. So
violates one of the principal lessons we learned from Dark Souls.
Which is that?
Don't be on fire.
Exactly. So here's something. So THQ, okay. So THQ Montreal, the studio with 1666 and Underdog. I have no idea what those are.
That's why it went under.
Yeah. So Ubisoft bought that, and Sega bought Relic. So Company of Heroes is still going to happen.
You know, I tried Company of Heroes, and just RTS is a lost genre on me. I could be playing the best RTS game of all time, and just can't do it.
You know that's not a good entry point. Like if you're going to do anything, you should play StarCraft or. Command and Conquer. Anything that's more fast paced like that. Company of Heroes. I played
the hell out of some Galactic Battlegrounds when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
a Star
just,
Wars game.
Yeah, and I have very fond memories of it. But it's just 8-year old patience, man.
8-year old, 8-year olds, dude. 8-year old patience, dude. So yeah, like it's nice to know that these studios are being bought, which is good, right?
Yes.
Like because there very well could have been some very talented people who lost their jobs, and I'm sure plenty of them did.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's just like that's good that you know even though THQ mismanaged their stuff, the hard work is being recognized at least by people who think, hey, we can make some money off of this. But I'm not seeing Red Faction anywhere.
Oh, was that THQ?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, what? I never played those games. Again, reason why I went under.
Well,
but
Volition,
I heard they were good.
Volition was the developer on that, and they were bought by Koch, but the IP wasn't bought by them, so who knows?
Hmm. Weren't the last several of those, though, rather weak?
Guerrilla was good. Armageddon was not. So, I don't know. A lot of these, I'm just happy to see that there's going to be more of them in the future. Were there any other kind of aspects to the story that you wanted to bring to light, Dennis?
No, I mean, it's a big happening in the industry, so I thought we'd give a little bit of time to it. But nothing too special there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of a slow news week, too. I don't have an awful lot. And looking back over this, yeah, man, I don't know. There's a lot of politics stuff that I don't want to talk about. That's not right in place.
Electronic Arts got UFC, so that's a thing. I was worried about, really.
Oh, man. So here's something. The developer of the new Tomb Raider game, which I need to see when that's coming out, because I think I want that game.
That's a game I keep on forgetting I'm excited for.
Yeah, yeah. I keep forgetting that it's not like October of 2012.
I just find the whole like thing with the violence in that game very entertaining.
Did you say entertaining or in entertaining?
Entertaining. In terms of like people's reactions to it, where it's like, you know, oh, we want, you know, strong female heroes. It's like, all right. It's like, no, you can't show, a woman being, injured. And I don't know. It just seems kind of weird.
I don't know how many people like are upset that she like, gets impaled on a branch and, just generally gets roughed up. I think it's like the tone of rapiness that some of the NPCs have towards her in that position that bugs people. So
see, I was saying a lot of stuff though, just about the violence.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're wrong. See, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
That's interesting though. And, cause they're definitely in some of the videos they showed were undertones of that, but it was shown in a very, serious manner. It wasn't making light of it. It was, hey, this is a threat. This is a really, scary thing that a strong female lead in this kind of situation might have to deal with.
Right.
And,
sorry.
Well, and I was going to say, in the second that someone raised their voice about it, they completely backed off of it. When really, if you look at what they did, it wasn't heavy-handed, and again, it was done with the right attitude towards it, I feel like. So yeah, we're 6 months late on that story, but.
just a little bit. But it's like the author's dead. Right. Look at any YouTube video page of the comments section of like a clip from Full Metal Jacket, and you'll have these like people thinking like, "Holy crap, the military is awesome." Well, did you watch the movie ever at all? Like, what people take away from what is made that like that doesn't there's no real control over it.
What presidential candidate was it that would walk out to everything for Born in the USA?
That was Reagan.
Yeah, Reagan. That's right.
Yeah. Just listen to a couple of words. But anyway, we're not here to talk about sexual assault or politics. We're here to talk about the console wars. Do you guys want to go back to talking about politics? No. I feel a little bit, I don't know. We hate on the Wii U a lot here. Just in general, Dennis. This is the first kind of instance of like, a publisher coming out and saying, "Hey, we can't do X because of Y." So Crystal Dynamics, the developer behind Tomb Raider, they're explaining why they don't want to bring Tomb Raider to the Wii U. And that's because they want to deliver this kind of uniform experience across all of the platforms that they bring it out on, right? So if they bring it to Nintendo's system, there's going to have to be a bunch of new stuff, and it's going to exclude things from from the other games. So they just would prefer to just keep it PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and PC only. Says the game's director, "I'm always a fan of Nintendo systems. In particular, they really push interface design, and from a game design perspective, it's fun to play with new interfaces. Having said that, it's something that I think we would want to tailor the experience to if we were going to do it." So, yeah, he's not, like, down on it, but this is, like, something that we were worried was going to happen, and then it happened.
Yeah. So to be clear, he wasn't saying there was anything wrong with the technical specs.
No.
It was the fact that this interface existed.
But why does he have to use it? I mean, why not just say, "Hey, we're going to use a regular controller, take it or leave it."
He says, "All three other console versions are really trying to deliver roughly the same experience, but delivered best on each platform. And I think something like the Wii U often asks you to do something unique based on a unique interface. That's something as a gamer I love, but it's something you don't want to do half-heartedly as a developer." So you have to respect that. If they don't want to do it just because they feel like they have to. And they would get slammed. They would get slammed, in the game media, something like that. The Wii U version would be considered inferior because it didn't take advantage of these functions, even if it was functionally identical to every other thing.
See, but that's stupid because, I don't know, I feel like that's the whole problem with the Wii U is you shouldn't use a feature just because it's there. That's, I mean, that's dumb.
Yeah. It's a, it's a problem of expectations.
Yeah.
That almost reminds me of like the whole Alan Wake, you know, oh, it's not actually HD. It just looks that way thing, you know?
Well, no game runs it like very, very few games actually run at 720, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Were you going to say something, Dennis?
I was going to say that's a very graceful bow out by Tomb Raider. You know, look, you are just such a free spirit and a beautiful flower. I don't deserve you. I'm ordinary. And I, you know, you deserve to be with someone as special as you are.
It's not you. It's me.
Jesus. I don't know. No, it's not. It's not you. It's we.
The grind. We talk about games that we play. Is there any new business to attend to?
I got a small little ditty.
Okay, cool. What is it?
Don't take that out of context. I got all my stuff last week.
Neat.
So my apartment is no longer empty. It is now full of empty boxes.
Ooh.
But as part of the stuff was my TV and PlayStation 3. So I'm able to play video games again. Yay!
Hooray!
And so I decided it would be fitting to play Fallout New Vegas and start as a new character.
Ah, yes.
And try and max out some stats. So I'm playing as Courier Freeman, and my character took the Four Eyes, not perk, but whatever the trade-offs are called.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you have to wear glasses to get a increase in perception, and if you don't wear glasses, you get a decrease in perception.
I like
so
that.
So anyway, yeah, so my dude looks like Gordon Freeman with a cowboy hat, and that's pretty rocking.
Oh, you mean like Adam Savage? The one Mythbuster.
One who okay. doesn't look yeah. like a walrus.
Yeah, kind yeah. of. Vaguely.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe a red-haired Gordon Freeman with a
yeah.
cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Or, well, no, a brown-haired Adam Savage. Sorry.
Yes. 6-1.
How many ways yeah. can we slice this?
So, as per what Fallout is like, or not Fallout, but Obsidian Games, I got about maybe 10 hours into it, and then it glitched, and I couldn't complete a main quest.
Oh.
So, I think I am done playing Fallout New Vegas.
It was a nice gesture, though. You'd been saying you were going to do that for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, it was fitting. Yeah. But and I looked at the map to see how accurate it was. It's definitely scaled in some places differently than how it is in true life.
Yeah.
But you know,
yeah,
you got to make concessions when making a game.
So. Like Prim is an actual town, but if you like, you couldn't walk from one to the other.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm happy you have your stuff. I'm sorry your thing broke.
It's okay.
I think like most Bethesda published games like that, the PS3 version is like behind on the, you know, compared to like the PC, definitely.
Okay.
But just in terms of the patches that they got, so I'm not surprised that that the bugginess was kind of left there waiting for you, you know.
The other thing. Truly not just saying this because this is my thing, but those are games I would never play not on PC simply because I had times where I used the console to fix stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Just like, and you were talking last week about playing, you know, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. I couldn't imagine playing that game as it exists outside, you know, out of the box without having the console there because
exactly.
there were so many times that saved my life. Like going to NoClip and things like that, so there is a really valid point to that. So, what else, man?
Well, the other thing was that kind of bummed me out about it was it felt like the exact same experience playing it a second or third time as it did the first few times I played it.
That's what I hear about Fallout games. People will start a second player and then just run out of steam.
Yeah, it's remarkably similar. Whereas
Steam crashes.
Actually, my experience with Fallout has been different. Now, granted, I didn't get too far, but you know, I played it all the way through as a small guns character, and then I decided I was going to do a run through entirely in first person shooter mode. And that experience was very, very different, not just because I was engaging different mechanics in the game, but I found, like, right off the bat, three different areas that I'd never even gotten to. So that was a game I didn't really play with a FAQ, or, you know, didn't really know what the places I quote-unquote should go were. Like, I never found dog meat in the in my first playthrough somehow. So, like, I... You know, even in the first, you know, hour or so of play, I was discovering things that I never knew were there.
Yeah, I think that is that so much like a consequence of having played it again? Or is it just a matter of, like, if you went back into your old character and then just decided to look at things in a little bit of a different way, you would still be able to find that?
You weren't precluded
from those things on your first go through. Whereas, like,
I just missed them.
Yeah,
I think that's something we miss in games today, just because everything is so fact and wikied and, you know, curse you, internet, I guess, right? But like, you know, you don't really go through games and miss anything if you don't want to. And so you do lose that element of, you know, if you're going to do a second playthrough, most of the time you either, you know, saw everything the first time that you wanted to see, or know exactly where the stuff that you didn't see the first time is.
Right.
I have I have 2 points. One, I think Hitman, the most recent Hitman game, is a game that does have a lot of surprises packed into it that the internet will not necessarily reveal. Like, you'd have to dig quite deep to get to some of them.
Yeah, and there's a difference between, like, looking something up, like, in a wiki and, you know, and game facts, and, like, looking at the exact thing happening on YouTube. You know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. and some of the stuff in Hitman, you know, and in a lot of games, actually, it's really, really hard to, like, convey what happens with that in text. Right.
Right.
Yes, probably.
Yeah.
Although.
Go on. There's one other point I wanted to make, too. And I think it's a problem that the Fallout game has, where there's not a convincing reason to make alternative decisions. So, like, I think each time you play through it, you kind of make the same decisions. There's no incentive for you to, like, blow the sheriff's head off and then kill a town full of people or something. And I'm not saying anyone should want to do that. Mm-hmm. But at least in games like Knights of the Old Republic, there was incentives to go dark side because that was made a fun and viable option to get objectives done. Also in Alpha Protocol, which is going to be something I guess I will reference a few times this week, but it rewards you for pissing people off. And so it rewards you for whatever playstyle you choose. And so I think that that's a big concept that Fallout New Vegas kind of missed out on, because it does not reward you for shooting random people or civilians. So
one thing I will say about Fallout New Vegas, and we've talked about it at length on our previous show, but it seems to be designed in such a way that, like, seeing everything has to do mostly with what factions you align yourself with and which NPCs you would like to have along with you. You know, if you want Veronica and Ganon with you, like, you know, like I like to have, or, you know, something like that. Like, those things, it's not feasible to see all of that in one go, right? So New Vegas has built into it these three disparate plot lines that you get locked out of after a certain amount of time. The NCR, Khazar's Legion, and then Mr. House or Yes Man, right? So this is one of those areas where I think Fallout 3 lags behind that a little bit, in that New Vegas is kind of meant for these disparate playthroughs, whereas in Fallout 3, your choice really is, do you blow up Megaton? Yes. Okay. and then it's like these little granular things that really just influence what reward you get and when, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you ever want to see a game that does that whole thing you're talking about really well, pick up on, I think it's like PlayStation 2 or 1, Way of the Samurai.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, do you guys know, and maybe this is one of them, do you guys know of any games that take you know, choices and differentiation to that level, to where, like, you know, based on who you align yourself with, the main objective of the game changes, or like the final boss battle is in a different place or with a different person.
See, where the samurai, basically, the game takes place over, like, say, 3 days, and takes a couple of hours to complete. But there's a whole bunch of factions, a whole bunch of events going on in the world, and they all happen in real time, regardless of if you're there or not. So basically, each time you play through, it's, you know, you going and interacting and changing these things. And so you could, you know, theoretically in one playthrough, you know, stumble upon a, you know, a completely different storyline or stuff like that.
Yeah. See also The Last Express, although that's really kind of built into the way that game plays. Like, you have to see everything in order to beat it. Also, in a similar vein, you know, the Zero Escape series. 9 hours, 9 persons, blah, blah, blah. I've talked enough about this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like how you agreed with me, like, right away, Ben.
Yeah, well, no, I've heard of that, and I know that you've talked about it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's another one.
Yeah.
Also, props to Heavy Rain for being a AAA game that that does a pretty good job of having branching storylines by the end of it.
Yeah, that's true.
That one's close to there.
Grand Theft Auto 4, that the choice that you make at the end, I think you fight a different person. It's been so long since I played it.
See, but I'd be interested in seeing choices, not just like changing who you fight at the end, but like overall objectives. So let's say, you know, take in the Fallout universe that if you, you know, at one juncture, if you choose with the quote unquote good guys, then your main assault is in the south side of the map and you're trying to retake some facility to purify the water. Whereas if you side with like the bad guys, then the, you know, the main big mission at the end is in the north side of the map and you're trying to, you know, find this secret vault or something like that, you know, where, you know, people would not only have, you know, just say, oh, I fought so-and-so instead of so-and-so, but my main story was the same. Mm-hmm. But whereas, you know, people would come in and say, yeah, man, Fallout was all about, you know, how precious our natural resources are. What are you talking about? You know, Fallout is actually about alien invasion, you know, when you get down to the end of it, or, you know, that's a bad example, but
what about, Deus Ex? Anyone?
The most recent one? I've only played
the original one.
I've never beaten the first one, so I couldn't comment as to how that diverges.
In the first one, you can kill most any of the characters, and the story goes on. It tends to be big time on whether you decide to go along with the conspiracy or not.
Right.
So
that's I don't want to spoil anything. So I'll stop. New Vegas. That's one that I've intended to go back to. I have all of the DLC for it, but I suppose I ought to finish up the game first. So I'm like right at the end, like, you know, as you do. Any other games, Ben?
That's all.
That's all.
It's been a light week.
Yeah. Me too, really. I mean, can I just go into mine? Is that
yeah,
cool
sure.
to everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've beaten the main portion of Resident Evil 6.
Oh, thank God.
Define main portion.
No. So, you know, that was actually the inspiration for this week's level prompt or multiplayer prompt. okay, so the main portion, quote unquote. There are three campaigns, Chris, Leon, and Jake. All right. And then, yes, he is a mercenary. If I said anything more about who he was, it would ruin some stuff about his campaign. He's plot significant. He's like really, really plot significant. And it turns out to be a pretty cool character, even if he is, you know, them trying to say, well, how do we bring Dante into Resident Evil? and then after that, initially upon the game's like release, once you beat all of those, you unlocked Ada's campaign, and she's kind of the connective tissue that runs between all of them. And there are unexplained events that happen in the main game that are explained by what she does, kind of like the Separate Ways side campaign in Resident Evil 4. And also, notably, you fight the actual villain of the game in her thing. So, I still have to beat hers. Like her campaign is roughly a third as long as the other ones. So that's like a night of play or whatever. I intended to do it tonight, but you know, time makes fools of us all.
About how many hours is each campaign?
Each campaign. Each chapter is roughly an hour, give or take, so 5 hours. So okay. This was the longest 15 hours of my life, it felt like. No, I say that and we joke about it and things like that, and I've said this a million times prior on the show, but like this game didn't know what it was doing insofar as like the tone that it wanted to maintain and things that it wanted to do. So the set pieces are amazing. Certain chapters are more inspired than others. I would say Chris's campaign is like it's trying to be Call of Duty almost. It's like a military shooter, like down to the point where you're fighting mutated people with machine guns, kind of like the last portion of Resident Evil 4. I'm repeating myself here, but yeah, it's a wet fart up until the very end, and like his last chapter is like choice. And then okay. Jake's campaign is like great the whole way through, because like the gimmick for that was, so the gimmick for Leon was that there are actual zombies, and the gimmick for Jake is that there's this big old nemesis like creature that is chasing after you throughout the entire thing.
Is that a not so subtle hint as to what's happening?
What do you mean?
Nemesis?
Well, it's a similar thing to Nemesis in Resident Evil 3, like down to the point where like there are shots and sound effects that are like about the same, you know, like so like there's just that idea of this like implacable wall of meat that is always two steps behind you and can mess up your world, you know, like it's pretty cool. And you know, even though there's not kind of the wandering and exploring part of the game that kind of made Nemesis really hairy in Resident Evil 3, you know, just kind of like, oh gosh, I need to somehow get around this area without him coming in and wrecking me, right? Whereas in this, you know, when he shows up, it's really kind of in these discrete pathways and things like that. They still do a good job of maintaining some of the tension. The story is really, really good. I say that with
really
with a number of asterisks and caveats and buts that probably like if printed on a page would use all the ink in the world.
Is it good the way that Resident Evil 4's storyline was good, where it, overall it's really good, but then you know you can make an argument against it by like all these little parts that are inconsistent with one another, like in tone.
It's almost this weird thing where the individual parts are kind of meh, but the whole thing when taken together, it's kind of like oh, and that has to do with kind of the Rashomon effect. Having played all three of the main campaigns and kind of getting a little bit into Ada's, seeing the parts where they intersect and kind of getting a little bit more perspective on what happened to those people in the lead up to that, it ascribes more significance to things you've already done in the past. And I always like that, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, just kind of like when you're in the middle of it, you don't see the forest for the trees, right? Sorry to use a cliche. But you know, when you kind of like take it, you know, in the long view, especially with some of the stuff in the files that you get by finding these, you know, these secret items, it's a pretty good story. In terms of Resident Evil stuff, I mean, it's super goofy. I would say that it takes the whole, oh my God, the whole world's in trouble. Like it scales everything up so crazily. Like two major cities are destroyed, et cetera, none of this is a spoiler. So it's just like literally the entire world is at threat. It like you lose all sense of intimacy of like, okay, this is a house that I can't escape from and it's filled with these things. It's like this is a world that I can't escape from and it's filled with these things.
I'm already in a world that I can't escape from. Let's not relive that.
Yeah.
Do they actually end the world?
That's the intention. That's all I can say. Like, yeah.
Okay.
I enjoyed it in the whole. There were just large stretches of it where I wasn't having very much fun. If that makes any sense at all. Mostly Chris's campaign. A lot of my like, Because like when I was playing Leon's, it was kind of like, okay, I'm feeling this out. Like I didn't really even understand the controls. It explains it so poorly. By the end of Leon's campaign, I was like, okay, cool, awesome, I'm stoked, I love this. And then like when we talked last week, I was so dispirited because Chris was just so awful. And then Jake's is good. You know, there's some bad parts that are a bit trial and error-y, but yeah.
So would you recommend getting it?
Not for full price. I know that that's like a crazy, awful thing to say, you know, in terms of like not being helpful at all. it's not helpful to say. I wouldn't say that like it was my choice to continue playing it to the exclusion of most other things. That's really just me wanting to beat it because I knew if I didn't, it would never get done. But if you know, like knowing you, Ben. Okay, I'm talking specifically to you now. Everybody else just kind of knowing you, Ben. Like you have a longer attention span than I do, and you get through games quicker. And I think that having less time to think about it and going down each chapter and down each campaign, you would probably derive more pleasure from it.
Okay,
than I did, but that's mostly just because I am really, really slow at games.
What?
Is that my thing now?
Well, I could list some games. That's all I'm going to say.
So anyway, that is a thing. So we'll talk about it in the end boss, but I'm trying to decide what's next. I know what's next, but so that's what I've been playing. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in the later portions of the show because it never ends. But Dennis, I would like for you to go next.
Sure. I've actually had a very steamy weekend.
This is a public forum.
Steamtastic. Actually, if I knew anything about the public forums from history, that's anyway.
Yeah, I've kind of started really sinking my teeth into some Steam games. At the extended recommendation over several weeks of friend of the show, Gary Butterfield, and of course at the urging of Cole Ross, also friend of the show, actually host of the show. Do you guys know him?
I don't know if we're a friend term.
No relation.
Yeah.
Kind of a dick.
Anyway, these two seem to have more and more influence over the things that I try, because I find that as I try the things they recommend, I like them. So Binding of Isaac was $1.24 on Steam last night, and I just had to take the plunge. It was too little money not to, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So I bought that, and I played it. I think I bought it at like 8 p.m., and then all of a sudden it was 1 a.m., and I don't really know what happened. But I've very much enjoyed it so far. One thing that I've heard Gary talk about the lore of the game and that sort of thing. One thing that never really came to light that was really interesting for me is that the opening cutscene that you watched, you know, as at the beginning of the game, very clearly contextualizes that this is a story that Isaac is telling.
Yeah.
Which I had never picked up on, and that actually kind of really was interesting to me, recontextualized a lot of stuff around the game. Specifically, actually, though, because I've done that. I remember times when I was like 8 years old or however old, and I was just mad at my mom for something, and I would just fantasize and invent these stories about how, you know, she would do something stupid and accidentally kill my baby brother because she was stupid and I was mad at her, and then she'd be sorry.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, about my life was so hard and I'm forced to do all this horrible stuff and do my homework, and they're going to make me, they told me I can't come out until I do my homework, but maybe I'll starve to death because I can't do it. It's too hard. And just like, and so just like that scene that this whole game is really Isaac's pity party over having his Game Boy taken away. it's kind of a funny recontextualization that I wasn't expecting.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, so all that aside, it's a ton of fun to play. And it's one of those things where you can almost just always have a window of it open and be on some playthrough. And you know, I think I'm talking about Gary a lot, but he really is a major influence in why I bought the game. He had mentioned he's got like some 400 hours into the game, and I heard that. I was like, how is that possible? And then I realized that I'm already at an absurd number of hours for how long I've owned it, mm-hmm. just because I've kept a window of the game open yeah. perpetually. It doesn't let you save, so you just kind of leave it up in the background. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of game that, you know, I could sit down and play it for 3 hours straight, or I could duck in for 15 minutes and clear a couple rooms and then get called away to something else. Mm-hmm. It's got great versatility that way.
Yeah. It's really good. I had to stop having it open like during work, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to have this. You have it on, you use your computer that Binding of Isaac is on for work, right?
I use my computer that everything is on for work.
Okay. Yeah. See, I've got it on a separate computer, and yes. that probably is my one saving grace.
Yeah.
But that's how, been a ton of fun.
What's your best run, Ben?
Best run, I got most of the way through the depths one.
Right.
And I actually have not gotten that far again since. And it's I'm like playing mind games with myself, trying to read into how this game is like directing me. Mm-hmm. Like the first run through, I did really, really good. And then it's taken me a long time to get. I actually don't think I've gotten all the way to the depths again since. And then I know, you know, from watching the Let's Plays that Gary has done, that he's getting much better items than I am.
Yeah.
With much better consistency. And part of that is because he has a better character, has unlocked some stuff. But still, it's like, you know, I think you've asked the question, Cole, of does it, you know, does the game kind of let you have better items the more you play it? And I think the answer is yes, right?
Yes, that is definitively the answer. But like there may be some kind of like random number magic where just it checks to see how many runs you've done, and you know you're more likely to get something good. But also, by fulfilling certain requirements, you unlock items. Which
I've seen.
You still have to
like
find them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've kind of wondered, like, even if, you know, maybe it gives you, did you have a really good first run the first time you played the game?
I have no recollection.
It was so many runs ago. I wonder if it like, it almost gives you a really good first taste intentionally. and like that got me hooked, but that's me being paranoid conspiracy theorist. Yeah. But so that's been a lot of fun. I also, I've been playing Shank.
Okay.
Which is, so as David has said, is basically Devil May Cry in 2D. and is a ton of fun. I really want to try the co-op mode. So David, we're going to have to find some time for that. But it's a great example of a game that has amazing aesthetics without necessarily good graphics.
Right.
Where it's, you know, it's got its own little cartoony style. It's nothing too fancy, but it knows what it looks like, and damn it, that looks good. So it's a lot of fun just visually to play through. And some of the one-liners in this game are just hilarious. Like the dialogue is so cheesy, and it takes itself so seriously that it's hard not to laugh.
Right.
So it's been fun. The combat is really intuitive. I've been playing it on the keyboard. Without a controller, which I think is the recommended way to play the game. And it's kind of funny, just the way I had mapped out the keys, I didn't realize the button to throw a grenade is right next to the button for me to reset the level. So E and R. And it's...
The button for throw a grenade is right next to the pet kitten button. The misunderstandings.
Right. And so there have been several fights until I remapped the keys where I've been in a really intense fight and I'm trying to get out of some trouble. I'm back
you
at the last
up
checkpoint.
The level.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Which is ridiculous. And it seems like because I went and tried to remap it and there was no entry for like restart from checkpoint. And so I just mapped the grenade key over the reset level key, and that still reset the level while at the same time throwing a grenade. So finally, I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to have to move this entirely.
Yeah.
But I've got a setup that works for me now, and it's a ton of fun to play, especially as you kind of the weapons combo and really reward switching in between. But at the same time, each weapon kind of has an ideal rhythm or number of button hits to get the most damage out of it before you need to switch to another weapon to without breaking your combo. And it's really kind of cool to learn that, you know, it's a system that's very accessible. I can just mash the different buttons and do pretty well. Or, you know, if I take a little time to tap it out and understand it, you know, I can be that much better. So the combat has a surprising amount of depth to it.
Mm-hmm. I really like the Mexican crime land sort of setting.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the genericized, you know, every you know crime movie set in you know Latin America thing.
Yeah. The awesome thing about that,
obligatory Catholic Church.
The awesome thing about that is that from the screenshots that I've seen, this is a game I own that I haven't played, that gives like a lot of opportunities for these really stylized silhouette shots where you're fighting like you know with your back to the sun. That kind of thing, and like just the you know that they design the characters so well that they hold up in silhouette. That is truly remarkable, I think. And
they do. There's a couple parts where you're like behind a terrace, and so when you knock people down, which the weapons I'm playing with are very likely to knock people down, you can't really see them because they're behind the terrace wall, and mm-hmm. that's super annoying. But other than that, yeah, it holds up really really well in silhouette.
Right. This is the same studio that did
Simulator.
What's that?
I said it's a great badass simulator.
Yeah, same company that did Mark the Ninja, which is another game that I really, really want to play.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah. Agreed. And then I've also been doing some more Dark Souls, and it just kind of occurred to me that there's this amazing rhythm of exploration and banging your head against the wall in this right. game. So I'm currently banging my head against the Four Kings boss fight.
Yep,
and it's like. You figure out how to drain the New Londo ruins, and it's like, oh my god, this whole new area is open to me. You do all this exploring, and every room is something new. And then you find the boss, and you spend the next 8 tries just dying and running the same path and dying. And
is that the last, the last end game content that you have to do?
I'm not sure. I seem to remember King Sigurd Framt naming 4 people, and I know mm-hmm. I've gotten 2.
Yeah.
So I've got I can't remember who I've gotten.
I know you've gotten Seath, and you
I got Seath, and then I got the Chaos Bed or the Bed of Chaos, and those are the only 2 that I've gotten. I think there are 4.
This might be a good time for you to like go someplace else, especially if you're banging your head against the wall in that, like trying the DLC. Would probably be a cool thing to do. Just because you don't want to keep on, I don't know, maybe I'm advocating giving up like I usually do, but
it's kind of weird. I'm playing through, you know, Dark Souls again or restarting or whatever. And I realize the first gargoyle fight, there's just no reason for me to do it.
Well, I mean, maybe not like right at that time, but you do have to ring the bell.
Well, yeah, I mean, eventually, I know. I'm just saying, like, I'm pretty much going straight to Darkroot Garden.
Yeah. No, you find that, like, you can really play around with the sequence.
Yeah, which, the weird cross-reference to the other podcast you do, I didn't think would annoy me, but really annoyed me. when you guys were talking about doing things, quote-unquote, out of sequence, I was like, no, that's not, you can't, I don't.
Weird to me because you posted, what is it, the next one you're doing, the Parish and then the Lower Undead Burg?
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, you know, I did Darkroot Garden after the Parish.
Okay.
And to me, I mean, the Lower Undead Burg was infinitely more challenging, more difficult than Darkroot Garden.
The way that we picked and this is getting into like really, really inside baseball. The way that we picked the order wasn't so much to be like a natural playthrough, but like what would get you through the plot the quickest. Mm-hmm. There are reasons to go to the Darkroot Garden before that, but it ends up it kind of comes out in the wash a little bit.
Sure. I think also part of it, I played pretty hardcore, like, heaviest shield, heaviest armor I could find.
Right.
So my playstyle specialized around fighting enemies that were slower than me that I could just keep out of the range of their attacks and then come in and, you know, slam them.
Mm-hmm.
And that strategy works extremely well in Darkroot Garden and really poorly in Lower Undead Burg.
Yep.
And that's something that affects what happens later. So to get back to Dennis's frustrations, he might not have a character that's specced for this boss. Right?
Oh, I definitely don't. And but it's one of those things where even though I'm banging my head against a wall, there's still like I'm making cracks in the wall every time. So mm-hmm. And this is the great thing about Dark Souls is every time I see what I did wrong and I see what I could have done better and keeps me coming back. But yeah, there might be a little more exploration for me to do.
Yeah.
Or I might just need to grab. That's the thing that's great is I can grab any other weapon in my arsenal and in a half hour have it upgraded all the way to where I can use it as my main weapon if I wanted to.
Right.
So, you know, there's that option there to me. Any discomfort I am feeling, I am holding myself to.
Yeah.
I think my favorite not being specced right was actually, ironically enough, the moth boss from Darkroot Garden, where I carried literally no ranged weapons. So luckily I soul stoned or whatever someone in, and I think I literally did no damage that fight.
Yeah,
it lands if you just wait for it.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was dead by that point, but
yeah,
that's funny.
I soul stoned in some like crazy sadistic psycho witch.
Yeah, that's actually an NPC.
Was that?
Yeah, Witch Beatrice. But we'll get to that on the other show.
Yeah. So those are the three things I've been playing.
Cool. Neat. How about you, David?
I actually, after the craziness of the last week, I broke down and picked up Far Cry 3.
Okay.
And nice. It is amazingly, amazingly good. I'm obviously a little biased because, you know, I love Indonesia, so, you know, that's, you know, the settings ready made for it, but it's just, I don't know, you know, really, really good, really fun to play. The set pieces are really well done. A lot of the characters are, really compelling. I realize like every review and everyone that talks about it says this, but the main bad guy, what's his name? Begins with
Voss.
Voss, yes. Is really, really well voice acted.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you played it at all or seen any of the
No. I've heard some of the reviews of it that said similar things to that. Yeah.
I've just seen what they've shown of him in the previews.
The way they write him, it's, you know, they don't just do him just straight up as like, you know, this menacing bad guy. You know, most of his dialogue is, you know, really playful and, you know, soft spoken and stuff like that. But it's just really, really bipolar where, you know, he'll be, you know, talking to you about, you know, oh, you know, ultimately family is all we have, and then, you know, just all of a sudden be screaming at you to look him in the eye when he's talking to you.
Oh, so he's Frank Booth from Blue Velvet.
Never seen it.
Oh, somebody laughed.
Sorry. But it does a really good job of making him come across as kind of dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, unpredictability is really, really scary.
Exactly. Exactly. I will say the one weird, kind of weird thing is the tone of the game is a little weird sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a lot, you know, those scenes and the basic premise of the game is really, really dark. But at the same time, kind of one of the overall points of the game or whatever is it's supposed to sort of be this island is kind of the inmates running the asylum.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're, so there's a lot of just weird things where, like, for example, your doctor that, you know, takes care of, you know, your wounded friends when you rescue people and stuff like that is basically a drug dealer that's, you know, hopped up on hallucinogens most of the time you're talking to him.
Yeah.
And, you know,
which made him the obvious choice to take care of your friends.
Well, I mean, theoretically, he does have legitimate
credentials.
You know, yeah, medical knowledge. He just decided that, you know, the Breaking Bad approach is more profitable.
Well, to be fair, Walter White doesn't use his product.
Okay.
That's true.
And but, let's just be 100% clear here.
We wouldn't want to go on the record as not knowing our Breaking Bad.
We don't want to alienate any of our Breaking Bad fans.
There are a lot of things that I'm willing to be wrong about, a lot of things that I actively embrace being wrong about. But I will not be wrong about Breaking Bad, nor will I aid or abet it. So, yes.
Fair enough.
But there's a couple of scenes that use that where it's just a little bit non sequitur. There's early on, there's a scene where you basically are tripping out on shrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more or less kind of similar to the Scarecrow sequence from the Arkham Asylum.
Nice.
Yep.
Not necessarily that, like, that direct subject matter, but like the way it's presented, where you're just kind of, you know, seeing things, you know, from this real surreal perspective and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also how they do the flashbacks to like fill in characters.
Hmm. Okay.
So there's a number of scenes like that, but gameplay's really good. It's Ubisoft apparently is now unable to make any game that isn't Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it's like it has way too many systems in it, right?
Well, but they work really, really well. Basically, what happens is when you sneak up behind a person, or really anytime you're crouched and close to someone, you press the melee key and you run up and execute them. And from that point, you know, you can either, if you have the correct upgrades, you can, a directional key will pop up and you can press that directional key and you'll run up to the next enemy and stab them again. Or you can click the fire button and you'll grab the enemy's knife and throw it and kill a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can press a number button, in which case you'll grab the guy's gun and start shooting people. Or you can press the grenade button, in which case you pull the pin on a grenade on their belt and kick them towards the following enemies.
Jeez.
So, I mean, but, you know, it can be really complicated. On the other hand, you know, when it works, when you go into a pirate camp and, you know, well, my favorite is enemies patrol generally in groups of two, the buddy system. So it never stops being entertaining to sneak up behind one guy, stab him, and then throw the throwing knife and get the next guy.
Right.
Nice.
But
So
I have to say, I think my favorite thing so far was when you get missions to basically kill off hitman missions, and I got one of them where I proceed to get to the location, and right as I get there, a pack of wild dogs simply kills everyone in the camp, and the mission succeeds. So.
Huh.
Good game. Very good game.
Cool.
Glad to hear it.
Maybe someday, eventually. Yeah.
Would you recommend buying it?
Yes.
You hear that confidence, Cole?
Yeah. Well, I think they're different things. Yeah. Do you have anything else, David?
No. My other thing I've been playing actually goes directly to our multiplayer, so I'll save it for that.
Okay, cool.
Multiplayer.
So, anyway, we have a multiplayer prompt. That is where we solicit responses from the community to talk about a particular thing. Sometimes we have you ask us questions. This time we asked you a question, and the question that I asked was, have you ever continued playing a game that wasn't great just out of spite or pride? That wasn't the exact wording, but you know what I mean, right?
So I actually put this up on my personal Facebook page. So I have two responses to read. That...
This one's popping off. So let's
is it?
Yeah. Because I have a Twitter response. I have an email response. Then we have the Facebook stuff. So why don't we read our personal ones, and we will intersperse it with the others reading stuff from the Facebook group. So
I put the prompt on my Facebook page for other people to respond to. So I have. Jeffrey Lawton, Geo Law, responded on mine. I also have a response from my mom.
Ooh, cool. Can I hear the one from your mom?
She just
slowly.
Said yes.
Jesus.
Ben!
Continue. We're not going to turn this into that kind of show.
No, she just said, yes, it's called Monopoly. Why does the game last forever?
That's a
question
thing.
Question mark, exclamation point, really true.
That's true. I was hearing. I heard about this on a video game's Hot Dog, which friends of the show. Apparently, Monopoly was designed to be a satire of capitalism to show why it doesn't work. So that you're not having fun is actually the intended response.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I just thought the game. It's actually. Near the end of the rules, kind of buried in there, is that the game ends when someone flips the table.
Yeah. Well, it does. It technically could go on forever because the last rule is simply repeat.
On the other hand, Monopoly Deal is quite possibly the greatest card game ever made.
Oh, that's a fun game. Yep.
It's like if you combined Uno and capitalism.
Uno goes on forever too. Damn, card games and board games are long.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, why don't we do one? Aaron M on Twitter says, "I finished the Far Cry 3 story last night out of pure hatred for everyone who made the Far Cry 3 story path." in direct opposition to what you said, David. We can agree to disagree. He is not here to defend his response. So
hopefully it's not a game that takes a shit and dies in the second half.
That is possible. It's happened before, I hear.
In Far Cry 2. And I'm not still bitter about it.
Not that I'm mad. Yeah.
That's not the sound of me gritting my teeth.
Yeah.
Can I take one?
Take a Facebook, man.
All right. Robert, that's an awesome name. Noakes?
Yeah, let's say Noakes.
Noakes and Ali Staves both mention World of Warcraft because you know he feels bad playing other games when he's paying for a game monthly, and Ali Staves mentions the fact that you know he was big into the raiding and kind of felt obligated probably you know to your guild. And this was especially relevant to me because I meant to cancel my World of Warcraft subscription this week and forgot to.
So you have another month of this.
Right. And also, I mean, kind of going what Ali said, the only reason I signed back up is because I'm friends in real life with a lot of people in my guild. It's my martial arts instructor, and actually he's decided to stop playing, which is why I am.
Yeah.
So I can relate.
So you're forming a pact.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got 12 steps and
that is funny. You know, just be careful when you start having to apologize to everybody in Ninja Looted. That one gets tricky. I've already said mine. That's recently. I'm sure there have been other games that I powered through, but it gets hairy sometimes. Yeah.
I'd like to go. I'll say one that I've been holding on to.
Yeah, do that.
I have to remember the name of the game first, though. Yeah, Just Cause 2.
That okay.
Game. Really?
That See, game. I thought you enjoyed it a lot.
I got a lot of love for it.
Really?
In parts. The boss fight was fantastic at the end. There's a lot of great parts to the game. However, I tried to 100% the game, and that's where I kind of formed a dislike for the game.
I think that's where that happens a lot, maybe.
Yeah.
Because you get to see it in all of its imperfect glory.
Well, yeah, there were many areas where – I mean they had a pretty good system as far as helping you try and 100% it, where they had a radar so that you could kind of find the things if you were close by. The only problem was in their city parts of the map where there are giant sprawling cities, the areas were huge. And so they were I don't know virtual sizes, but let's just say a square virtual mile.
It's about 6,000 Tomba widths.
Yeah. Yes.
So you couldn't really find all the things, or it was just very grueling to try and 100% the game. So
were those things that was, you needed to destroy?
There was various things. Yeah, there were some towers you needed to destroy. There are some things you needed to pick up, I think, maybe. But anyway, I know I made it past 90%, so that was me pushing through. But yeah, I did not make it to the end.
Sure,
yeah.
White.
See, I always defaulted to getting in a jet and just carpet bombing things until I accidentally hit whatever I was supposed to be destroying.
Huh. Dennis, you're a 100%er, right? So you like at least both of you, right? You've 100%ed a game or two.
Yeah, 100%.
Yes,
I have. I like to know that I got everything. Although that's I was super that way before I got Gamefly, and then I don't have Gamefly anymore. But then real life demands a little more attention. But definitely I like going through and knowing that I got everything. I think the first game I 100%ed was maybe Jak and Daxter, the Precursor Legacy. No, probably Spyro games before that. I 100%ed.
Yeah, but like, have there been any of those that you've just been like, I am purely playing this out of obligation to this goal that I've set for myself?
So I mentioned, and I called this out as my favorite game of all time and recently, but in the Precursor Legacy, I was missing literally one egg in one level, keeping me from 100%ing. And I spent literally hours just wandering around the level trying to find it. And it was ultimately like halfway clipped through the geometry somewhere.
This was before the interwebs?
Yeah, yeah. And it was one of those things where, it was slightly, I don't know if it was a glitch or what, it was not where it was supposed to be. And these, they're not the precursor orbs, which are like the main collectibles, but the eggs, which are, think of like, the coins in Mario. Like there's thousands of them, and I was missing literally one. So now that said, the feeling of triumph when I finally stumbled across it was unparalleled.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy that game. I'd go back to it in a heartbeat and all that stuff. So I definitely have a different game for the one that I kept playing even though I was ready to throw my controller.
Okay, why don't you say it?
Sure. It is The Force Unleashed.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically,
and that's a short game, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have a whole lot of meat on them bones, but it is rancid fucking meat, man. Specifically the Star Destroyer.
It's
Star Destroyer boss fight, which everyone acknowledges is just blatantly broken. And I had gotten to a point where I had failed so many times and I kind of had a good run on it going. And then I screwed up so that I had a tiny little bit of health left. And I found out, you know, I figured if I just hid in this corner and really cheesed it and only took a pot shot at this one specific moment that came around like every 5 minutes, I could probably last through it. And at that point, it was probably smarter for me to just restart the fight. But I was like, damn it, this is the time. And it probably took me 10 times longer than it should have, but I got through it.
Yeah.
And just completely hated myself and the game and life for the rest of it. But I paid my dues getting through that boss fight, and damn it, I was going to see the end of this game.
Yeah, I mean, is that just the sunk cost fallacy?
Like, yeah, throwing good money after bad.
Yeah, the just dread that just drives most of this, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Wait, what fallacy?
The sunk cost fallacy, which is like, oh man, I've put $100,000 into fixing this house up. It'd be a shame to stop now. You know, something just like that. Spilt milk, right?
Right.
Yeah. So Christopher Hare, he says something pretty similar to the other WoW stuff. There's a lot of WoW regret.
Is this like a bad relationship? Is this really like an internet prison? Are you guys okay? Do we need to form an uprising?
Do we need to save you?
You don't have to say yes or no, just nod.
I just tap the microphone.
I'm always pro uprising. So, I mean, I don't think we even need a reason for that.
Ben, why don't
you? I'm always pro uprising. That DLC is coming out soon, I hear, right after Cataclysm.
Ben, why don't you Brandon's thing?
Brandon mentions Dishonored, which is kind of an interesting entry. He says he thought the whole experience was lukewarm at best. In the beginning, he kept playing and waiting for it to get better. By the end, he just wanted to beat it because it was easy enough and he didn't want another unfinished game.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. We haven't really talked about Dishonored, despite a lot of people saying it's a good game.
Yeah. So, I own it.
That gives me very little hope. Because I started playing it and despised it.
Hmm.
Well,
hey,
and so I'm worried that now I'm gonna be in the same boat. You know, I figured I'd come back to it and figure out why everyone else liked it, but maybe it's not me.
I'd also like to add another one to the list. Skyrim. I played through that entire game, but I hate myself the entire time I played it. It's still not a bad game, but yeah.
Dennis, you had another personal one?
This is from a friend of the show, Geo Law, and he actually says all the Pokemon games, to be honest.
Every single one.
All of them.
Well, is he talking, I wonder, about actually beating the game or about, you know, trying to collect them all? Because I could see how trying to collect them all, especially now, would just be soul deadening.
Yeah, I could see that. He does not specify, but I could definitely, again, the whole kind of collectible 100%ing thing can kill a lot of joy.
Yeah.
I actually, hearkening back to one thing we were talking about early in the episode, one thing that was also like this for me for the first time I played it was the graveyard in Dark Souls.
Oh,
because I didn't know it was the wrong way, and there was legitimately a period where I was playing it going, oh my god, I cannot give up on this so early. Winkle says it's so good, I will feel horrible about myself, I need to keep on. And then of course I found my way and it was awesome.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
there was a period.
Are you not supposed to go through the graveyard?
No.
Okay.
No, you should go to the graveyard, and then you should find a cave, and you should go in there, and just keep going.
Just go as far as you can. No, in general, you don't go down, you go up.
Okay.
That's what you should know right now. It's a mistake. Everybody that I've talked to has made that mistake, and that is the mistake I made that turned me off of the game. The first time.
No, it's like a universal thing. And I hate to think that there are people out there who, you know, didn't think to go to the wiki or didn't think to seek out a community of help or didn't have like a shepherd to the game like we have in Cole that like just tried it and gave up on the game altogether at that point.
Right. David, how about you? What have you stuck with way too? Oh, you already said WoW. Okay, so.
Well, actually, I kind of do have one. That would definitely be Dead Island for me right now.
Yeah, I see you playing it still. When you said last night that you were gonna be quit of it.
The thing is, honestly, I bought the game and I want to get my money's worth out of it, and it was a game that at first I just loved, but I at some point it just dropped off. I think just like I said, the completely unlikable characters, where now I just despise it.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing out, and I think this is part of what makes it so painful, though, is they have a habit of putting, crafting recipes and, important items, collectibles, in instances that you can't get back to once you beat.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that they kind of force you to, wander every single side passage of this sewer you're walking through or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Of course it's a sewer. Yeah, it's any sewer level ever also in this category.
Yeah, pretty much.
Especially freaking Dark Souls.
Yeah. So our final response from Gary Butterfield, who sends in something kind of lengthy. He says he's got two quick points. When most people talk about this, it's rare that they actually feel like a game has lost all value. It's possible the system stops supporting the narrative or vice versa, but there's usually something to keep you going rather than principle. For example, the current generation Ghostbusters game quickly became infuriating yet boring from a mechanical standpoint. The narrative, however, still held some interest for me because it captured a lot of the charm of the movies. So I stuck with it, though I wasn't having much fun. If it's actually principle that keeps you playing a game, that's very close to insanity. What do you have to prove and to whom? You realize these are video games, right? Secondly, I've more or less resigned myself to quitting any game that ceases to hold appeal, no matter how much I'm invested. The deciding game was Final Fantasy XII, a game with systems that compete to undercut fun, with a bland and seemingly unending narrative, and one that failed time and time again to live up to its predecessors. I'm not some mouth-bleeding fanboy. I can accept the idea of a modern Final Fantasy, but when that game let fly its true colors, I stopped getting anything from it, and I knew it was time to quit. My time is too goddamn valuable to be to pretend there is honor in finishing bad art.
Hmm.
So yeah, I mean, like,
wow.
Sorry. Passionately put, yes. No, like I included like principle in the prompt, mostly just to evoke hyperbole, you know. But just like that first point was right. Like just you want to have finished it, right? You want to have played it. And that was the case for me with Resident Evil 6, right?
Yeah, I would agree with one caveat, which is I think that a lot of people are just wired that almost to have a discipline of finishing things, and that that they derive a satisfaction out of having completed something, even if that something was not itself satisfying. If that makes any sense,
yeah.
And if that, if you know yourself and if that's just how you're wired, then maybe it's a very docile kind of insane. Yeah. We'll call it.
Well, I feel like there's also less in video games just because video games aren't as culturally yet. But, there's definitely like movies I watched simply because the movies you're supposed to see that I wanted have seen them, so I'm in on the culture.
Yeah.
And I feel like I like his last sentence. I feel like that in these instances in the future, that will be my motto, that time is too damn valuable to waste it finishing bad art.
Yeah, it's
AKA Wuthering Heights.
It's definitely a good and sane sentiment. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm not going to waste my time if I'm not having fun. But I think that at least in my case, it's a matter of I would like to see if I can dislike it more, because kind of like, oh, well, maybe it gets better. Don't worry, Krusty's on his way. Krusty's going to come.
Well, and
this oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think also, at least for me, when I stop playing games, it's often just an issue of inertia. You know, where you know, once I, you know, like, I don't complete Dark Souls because I remember all the crap I'm going to have to deal with. Like, I dread the fact that on my new character, I'm going to have to go through the depths again.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, whenever I start playing again and I build up that inertia, I really enjoy it. So I think sometimes that's why people do that.
Yeah, there's also the notion of, like, this presupposes that you're going to make a grand gesture and put the controller on the ground and say, no more. When in reality, you probably just let it gather dust on a shelf, right?
In reality, you find something more interesting to do.
Yeah, you go ride bikes or something, you know?
The one piece we've left out of this is from back in the day when really you only had one game at a time.
Yeah.
You saved up and went halvesies with your brother. And the game you picked was based on the box art and it might actually suck, but damn it, that's what you had to play.
Yeah, and you know, we're told to clean our plates. So thank you so much, everybody, for participating in that. Again, lots of great response. Keep an eye out for more stuff like that. And think of questions you would like to ask us. You can use the contact form, but we will say all that at the end.
The end boss.
End bosses, our final thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. Who wants to go first? I've got one.
What is it?
Okay. So everybody remembers, as I hope you do, because you pay attention to all my life. about a year ago, I was talking about the backlog where I like listed every game and, you know, things like that. That list laid fallow as I bought more games and didn't beat them on top of it. And my way of keeping track of those didn't take digital games into account.
And Steam!
Or GOG or Humble Bundles and various whatnots. So I tried, like, you know, making an OmniFocus project about it, but that kind of, you know, again, laid fallow. Everything's laying fallow. It's like everything's rotting on the vine. So my new tack, again, I've gone through my entire collection and laid down everything, you know, laid everything on the side down that I've beaten. But I have each game written on an index card, and I've made this pile from most recently purchased to the you know, least recently purchased.
Just out of curiosity, what's the least recently purchased?
Of modern games, like, you know, which I consider PS2 to kind of be the cutting off point, Xenosaga Episode 1.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. That's the end boss for this. Unless, like, now that I have, like, shelf space for all of these old games, I could actually go back even further. But to keep, like, to put these in order and to have it in a prominent place to where I can add on top of it and, you know, take stuff away and get rid of it when it's done. So it's a physical artifact that I can see. So it's not like me piling the games up next to whatever I'm, you know, standing by. But the idea is, like, by having just one available to me, I think that creates Resident Evil 6 situations. So I want to have the top three available to me. So I take the top three off, and when I beat one, there's another one that, you know, is pulled up. And if I get a new game, I put one of those back on the stack so I can replace it with that. So at any given time, I can have three games that I will not feel bad playing.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's a good system. I'm gonna call it, though, Cole, is you will never significantly get through your backlog because then you will have nothing to organize.
Well, considering my comic book collection.
Well, there. That's the loophole.
Yeah.
And I can, you're just mistaking what game he's playing.
Yeah. I am on a whole new level of, I don't even know what I want to call it. Help. No, so that's my end boss. Shocking evidence of my. I was going to say slowly, but let's just go with it. Rapidly degenerating sanity. Anyway,
my end boss is that, you know, for the first time I have gaming on a laptop, and that's very dangerous because I can take that up to bed with me, which means I suddenly realize that it's 1 or 2 a.m. Whoops.
Yeah, it's tough having, like, you know, having a computer that you can have access to in bed. like my iPad.
Might have
like
to restrict that.
Yeah, it's weird, right? It's kind of like, you know, you never want to sleep in the room where you work, etc. It's just division of space. But yeah, I'll stay up reading forums on my iPad until all hours. until I decide to, okay, this is a coffee table thing, and then I find this way back in again, and you know, we're all back, mm-hmm. we're all back where we started. Yeah. So, how about you, Ben?
I don't really have an end boss. I feel like there's okay. no pressing challenges. In case you couldn't pick up from my questions, I think I might get a new video game soon. So. Perhaps that could be an end boss.
Ah, cool. Well, we gave you two options. David, round us out.
Things have been fairly crazy in my life recently with driving up to Cincinnati twice in a week. So I'm just going to pull out something crazy. And my end boss will be, I was reviewing the Brack Show because it's awesome. And I think I have a new bucket list item, and that is to actually make a 3-ham omelet.
3 hams will kill him.
Like, seriously.
3 hams will kill him.
Ham is not that expensive, and eggs are hella cheap. So I'm going to make a 3-ham omelet.
Hi, everybody. Yeah. Oh, man. The Brack Show. That's amazing. Yeah, man. That in space goes coast to coast. Holy hell. Yeah. Picks. Do it.
Yes. Didn't Space Ghost Coast to Coast kind of evolve into the Brack Show?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everyone realized that Brack was by far the most entertaining character on that.
Brack and Zorak, you know.
Yeah.
Cool. Want to button it up?
Sure.
Cool.
No.
That's right. We haven't answered that way before.
It just goes on and on and on.
The credit.
So thank you so much for listening to the 10th level. Hey guys, we made it to 10. How about that?
Yay!
As far as things you can do, the Facebook group is on and popping. I typed that to somebody recently, and my initial typo was on and pooping, which is it's a funny word. thank you so much for going there. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, where you can like us and participate in the conversation, and we really appreciate that. If you're not a Facebook person, you know, everybody's got their own style, I guess. Similar to having your own style, if you want to subscribe to us on iTunes, that is where the majority of people are getting this show from, and you can leave us a rating or a review, and that helps more people see us. So if you want to help share this magic with everybody around you, that's a good way to do it. And generally, you can subscribe on RSS, check out past episodes, all that kind of good stuff. Tell your friends, blah, blah, blah. If you would like to support the network monetarily, you don't have to give us anything. You just have to shop on Amazon like you normally would. You just go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar, click that link, you go through, you buy what you were going to buy, and we get a little cut of that, and that helps support hosting costs and whatnot. Is there anything that I'm missing, fellas?
Have a good week.
Yes, all that. So we can do the roll call with the tutors and stuff. I'm Cole Ross. That's at Cole Ross, KOLEROSS. My name is spelled weird. Don't forget it.
I am Dennis. I am at D Furia. My name is not spelled weird, but it's DFURIA.
I'm David Moneysmith. My name is weird, and I'm at Moneysmith777 at Twitter.
Moneysmith77 at Twitter /internet.
Yes, at computer.
How did you know where I am?
My name is Ben Merkel, and it's at Merkelizer. I'm not going to spell it.
That's fine.
It's
fine.
I haven't.
Oh, man. So thank you so much for listening. And if you're playing a mediocre game, don't be afraid to cut bait, says the hypocrite. Thank you.
bootleg.
Is this government research that, like, do we need to bleep out?
Are there, I mean, well,
Ben, are there black helicopters on the way?
I can't talk about it, guys.
Oh, shit.
I gotta go.
You fucked us all.
All I can say is rearrange the letters in. They're coming.
Oh, yeah, I definitely can't have that in there. Whoops. and unless you're clear to say the name of your employer on this show, Ben, I don't want to get you in trouble.
I don't know. I don't think they're going to listen to it.
Well, no, I just let's say safer than sorry. But
you should just do a tasteful, like, loud beep whenever Dennis says.
Damn it. Another marker, okay?
No, actually, Ben, you actually said it last episode. I don't think you actually specifically stated it was your employer, but you did say it.
He did say it, but it didn't. No, let's keep all this out.
So basically, now the last 5 minutes are going to just be one long beep.
I guess
it's one of those gags.
And this episode won't come out until 2014.